are listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriting. My name is Mark Linsenmeyer. For more Nakedly Examined Music, please check out nakedlyexaminedmusic.com. My guest for episode 24 is Tyler Hislop, whose hip-hop name is Sacrifice. You're right now listening to a 2016 instrumental called Stasis Free. And while some of his activity is devoted to creating soundscapes like this, the basis of his work is rapping, often philosophically informed, very wordy, many more phrases, many more rhymes per song than even the most overindulgent lyricist like myself. He's recorded more than 10 albums over the last dozen years or so, and I'm happy to say I've gotten to work with him on this podcast. He's been our editor on all of these episodes. He does the mixing together of the two voices and the initial pass, smoothing things out. So he had the privilege of editing his own interview in this case. The songs we'll be discussing today are Negative Space and Long Way Down, both from the 2015 Long Way Down album. And then looking back to a 2008 track, Kids of the Earth, from the Quest for Meaning collection. And we'll wrap up by listening to another track off of Long Way Down called Ciphers, as an example of one of his many collaborations with other rappers, in this case one called Grimm, that is Benjamin Grimm. Now, I could not have asked for a better introduction to hip-hop in this whole indie world of making electronic music and rapping over it. To hear more of Tyler's work, check out soundcloud.com/sacrifice. So you've been doing more instrumentals recently, is that right?
I do a bit of both all the time. A lot of times I dive in and create instrumentals with the intention of recording music over them, but it's kind of like writing as a composer, as a poet would write, a composer would write, or a producer would write in this way, where I just load up the programs, get the software and the hardware ready, and just kind of create. And the great thing about making hip-hop beats is that they're very loop-heavy or loop-friendly, mm-hmm. and you create these underlying canvases with which you can build upon, and they're very easy, intuitively easy to build. So the compositional style is such that you can really just sit down and create something quickly based on an idea, or just kind of freestyle something, and as a result develop instrumentals in that way. So I tend to make a lot more instrumentals than I do actual songs, because of course sitting down and writing and recording tends to take a lot more time. So it's more of a sketch or a drawing or a doodle, as opposed to a full-on composition.
So when you started this, I see your earliest albums that you had linked me to that you had marked as not fully developed, as not mature, back to 2004 or so, or I think you had back to 2002 on your website a little bit. Yeah. I know some of those just said, here's something over a beat by blah. What software are you using? Is it Reason?
I've been using since the very beginning a software called Fruity Loops. It's now been renamed as FL Studio. And
okay.
That's what I started with at the very beginning. I would say probably back in the late 90s when I first discovered that I had a little bit of a knack for music. In my earliest music, I did make all of the beats and stuff, but then I got away from that a bit and I started using other production, other people's music. Because for a long time, I didn't do it for any profitable purpose. I just like writing rhymes and rapping a lot. So a lot of the early stuff really is just me finding instrumentals from people on the internet who are sharing them or leasing them and just doing music. I was very prolific at that time when I was younger. So if I found something that sounded vaguely good, I would write to it, and I did. And a lot of music came out from that kind of practice.
So if it says, you know, this is a Sacrifice and Tally over a Euphrates beat, is that, right. Or a Mole Men beat, those are not like the loops that came with the software. Those are people you're collaborating with remotely.
Some collaborating with remotely, and some just beats available on the internet and making music to them. Of course, I'm not trying to gain profit, so there's no royalty contract or lease agreement or anything like that. But yeah, a lot of the early stuff, like a lot of the people that I worked with back then, we would get together and we would say, hey, this beat sounds pretty cool. I have an idea. We would collaborate and make music. It was very lyrically driven, you know, and then of course later I would get into my own composing, and that's what I've been focusing on more lately, which is why I've chosen to do all songs for this interview, stuff that I've worked on from the ground up, as opposed to just layering lyrics on top of a production that's already been created.
Yeah, so I was wondering about that. I mean, it seems completely different skill sets, obviously naturally complementary, but it's a useful thing. But like many of these guests that you have when you have other rappers, are some of them just purely rappers? Like they don't do background music at all?
Yes. So a lot of them are, you know, like me, they do a little bit of both. But yeah, a lot of the people that I work with, it's very easy with the internet and with writing rhymes and having, you know, modern technology. I mean, most rappers now in the modern age, they have a computer. They can go to Walmart or Best Buy and get a decent recording setup to the point where they can throw on a beat and start rhyming and make music. And it is very easy as an entry level kind of approach. But as a result, a lot of people are just writers or lyricists or poets, and the natural inclination into music as a poet or a writer is hip hop in some regard for people in this who prefer this genre. But some of the folks that I work with now, Tali, for example, you know, he happens to be an amazing producer. I mean, one of my favorite. I don't have anything to share of him, you know, that we're going to choose today, but I've been working with him for a long time. So there are exceptions. You do find in hip hop, especially in the underground community, people engaged in a lot of the different facets of the craft, because again, it is so hands-on and so easy to enter into it. It's not like other genres where you pick up a guitar and you play and you have to learn the instrument and become confident and comfortable with the instrument, etc. You sit down and you write and you record it. And getting comfortable with your own voice and getting comfortable with breath control and your flow, that's what you're focusing on, but it's easier to get into it in that fashion.
Well, let's get your first song on the table. So like I said, you started late 90s. You're recording at least the things that are still up on the internet by 2002, 2004. Well, this is a 2015 from Long Way Down, the last of your 10 albums that you linked me to, most of which seem to have like 20 songs each. So this is and it seems like a lot of these were not even created necessarily, you know, have them spanning multiple years. Is that just you make an album when you have enough stuff, or in this case for Long Way Down, were they thematically and sonically linked such that it was supposed to be an album?
So it's true in the early days, with some notable exceptions, but fewer than otherwise, that it was just a matter of making a lot of songs and saying, hey, I have 18 now. I think I should probably compile these and compartmentalize them and then move on. And a lot of times I've noticed that those lines of demarcation, you know, when I set aside a set of songs and then move on, there's an evolution that occurs, whether it be comfortability or skills or what have you. Long Way Down was conceived pretty much at the outset as a project that I would build from the ground up. It happened to be part of a time in my life fairly recently that a lot of things in my life were changing. So it was coming on the back of a lot of influence with personal experiences, with family, etc. So yeah, Long Way Down is much more conceptually built and thematically built. And as a result, there are similarities between the songs as far as the chord progressions and melodies and those types of things, and also lyrical content. So this particular song is very specifically a response to what was going on at that time.
Anything more specific to say about Negative Space?
In practical context, my son's mother was away in the military. She was in Florida, and I'd driven down there with my son to visit, and it was a very peculiar time because the relationship was very clearly on the outs. I mean, I was sitting in a hotel and I was kind of ruminating on the military industrial complex and combining it with my kind of downtrodden view of what was happening with my relationship. And so as a result, the song is a kind of reflection of the way I was feeling with my personal life and also a reflection of the kind of a general criticism I have with war in general, and then being in a family that's now inherently military, not by my choosing necessarily. So there are some allusions to military. There are some allusions with a lot of what I return to in my music is this kind of lamenting the passion to be a creator and being afraid of the passion that I feel, and the muse being a kind of
a fascist here.
Yes. A fascist, a sickness, a demon, someone who directs me and guides me, but that I need to be directed and guided. I need to be forced. And so the metaphor to me is that it's a negative space, but I don't necessarily want to be or feel this way, but I'm glad that I have this outlet, you know. And it's kind of a denial and a positive denial, and thank goodness I have the ability to elucidate these feelings in a creative way and make music from it. Otherwise it would be more negative, it would be more detrimental, so or consequential in that way. So of course the lyrics are dense and rhyme scheme heavy and quick, and there are a lot of layers of metaphor, but I think it came out great. It came out in a blur.
out of focus. Muddy the balance, broken student of some illusion. I study to challenge hopelessness. Every word written conflicts with my burning soul. I've learned this is absurd, this isn't learned control. No will at the helm, managing brilliance and health, but still a caller from the panic I'm built up from self. No other words, it's danger confronting urge. Afraid I'ma jump if I can't stay in constructive verse. I must have heard as a youngin', maybe from the church, that love is worth nothing, they punish and serve suffering. I'm running from God, he's hunting with bombs. Remote control destruction like nothing is wrong. But I guess it's better than sending babies into the jungle with a gun in their palms. Or is it? I'm under the palms of visit to wonder if all that's wishing is just an alarm. My image of what is in store is just another exhausting vision. Nah. Oh yes, she's a beast of a demon. Her soul's dressed in the rags of a past mythical, crafted in gold, lack of control. Flesh full of legions from seeking and reason. Irrational belief in this reach and the actual reality's a brick wall. Within a minute, frames of its pitfalls, hanging with the strength of a thin straw. But no matter what, to break it, you must embrace the mistakes that you made and admit fault. It's changing the face of a matron of insults, and she won't take any shit talk. Nah.
So let's just talk musically first. It seems like you have a lot of minor key stuff on here. So did it start with this little piano, the da-da-da-da-da thing that was the basis for the song, or?
Yeah, that and the very heavy repetitive drums, that very slappy, tasty sounding snare. I was kind of trying to go for a contrast to the negativity with something that bombastic and loud that slaps you in your face. And then, of course, the droning of the piano. They were the bass line, but the emphasis was on the synthesizer, the sine wave synthesizer that I harmonize over in the chorus.
Right, with that interesting little blue note, which I guess is like the flatted second, that you're almost back to the root. Do, do,
do, do. Yeah, and I find a lot of my music, I'm often trying to tread that line between, you know, the minor negative and the major harmonic, and trying to combine the two in a way, because I have a very positive view of my own music, but it's often dressed in this feeling of depression or depravity. So I feel like it translates here. The chorus is very big, and I wanted the chorus to be very big because, again, that contrast between the negativity of the sinking feeling of being downtrodden, but the powerful release of the creative endeavor or of the muse pulling me through that space into something that's very obviously in your face and loud and bombastic with the drums.
Yeah, I know it's often difficult with this kind of music to have more than one chord, really. And it is sort of dwelling in the same place, but it's kind of clever how you can have that same repetitive loop riff, but then play a couple other piano hits on top of it to sort of add a little progression through. So it's about three chords, really, instead of...
Exactly. You'll find the more that you listen to hip hop, especially with my music, the composition aspect, and I've been thinking about a way to say this to you because I was anticipating this interview, because in the other interviews, I've been so intimate with them in a different way. In other genres of music, the canvas that a composer or an instrumentalist is creating is obviously complementary to the lyrics. And of course, they're written as complementary to the lyrics and vice versa. With hip hop and hip hop production, it's less is more in a lot of ways. If there's too much going on in the background, because lyrics are so upfront and rapid fire and complex and oftentimes very difficult to digest and understand, obviously you don't want to submerge the forefront, that mid-range where all the vocals exist, with so much other mid-range stuff and obscure the meaning, because lyrics are the forefront. There are a lot more words and there are a lot more lines in hip-hop. So especially in mixing in general, you want to create a space for the lyrics to sit in and create a composition that complements them well. So the repetitive nature of the looping, especially in this song, and then having the choruses be very loud and kind of it's a very clear separation in the choruses. And there's no lyric in the chorus. It's just me saying, nah. The backdrop of the minimalistic nature of the looping of the lyrics and the foreground with all the very complex lyricism and heavy rhyme schemes on top of it.
Yeah, although I noticed that in this one, as opposed to some of your earlier stuff, or at least the third song, Kids of the Earth, that we're going to listen to, which is just packed with lyrics from beginning to end, here it's all done by the end of the first 2 minutes, and then you basically reprise the same thing, but it just kind of lets you actually enjoy the music the tone a little more and have a little dynamic change.
Right, and that, it goes back to what I was saying before, the maturity. Early on, I was obsessed with my lyricism. I was so prolific that I could write for hours and hours, and I could endlessly rhyme. And early criticisms of myself on my own music were that, man, you're way too complex. You're saying so much. You're packing it all in there. Kids of the Earth and that album, that was an evolution in and of itself, because I was able to create a song, jam-pack lyrics in there, and have it have a kind of structure. The difference here is, you know, I'm erring on the side of lesser is more and letting the music also carry itself out. The chorus and the way it rides out, it sounds so good. It sounded well enough. I didn't need to pack on more and more. I feel like I made my point in the lyrics that I wrote, and letting that composition and letting the mix kind of, you know, of course, and also you're saying so much in the first two verses. Let the last minute and a half, 2 minutes, you know, ride and let people contemplate and go back and listen again and contemplate what they heard and what they feel like they've interpreted. I think that's important as well, rather than just sort of ending it after 86 lines of lyrics. That can be too much for people. And that's part of my evolution. I've dialed it back on the lyrics because I'm still rhyming a lot. There's still a lot of rhyme scheming. It's still quick.
Yeah, it seems like the pace might even picked up over your evolution. Just listening to your first couple albums, I feel like I can mostly follow it, you know, as long as I'm listening to the lyrics. Whereas pretty much all the stuff we're listening to tonight here, it's fast paced enough that I need multiple passes. It was very helpful to actually have the lyrics in front of me. It almost is like listening to a foreign language that you took in school, where like, oh, I think I heard that phrase. And like by the time you sort of register that phrase is in there, then like, well, two more sentences have gone by. And so just getting a picture of like, what is this whole thing about? And so with the first couple listening, a few lines just jump out. So, but it's better than sending babies into the jungle with a gun in their palms. I remember that was one that just the first time I heard, like, okay, I knew it was about that. I wasn't sure what else was about. Can we focus in a little bit? So just the first stanza here, frequency out of focus, muddied, the balance broken, student of some illusion. I study to challenge hopelessness. Every word written conflicts with my burning soul. I've learned this is absurd. This isn't learned control. So, I mean, is it inherent in the genre that there's a lot of self-reflection on the fact that you are rapping and that you are writing, that like seems a recurrent theme, not only in your writing, but of the many guests that you have on, that they're talking about their rhymes and maybe how their rhymes are better than other MCs' rhymes or.
Sure. So it's Ars Poetica. In hip hop, especially, it's an offshoot of Ars Poetica, but it's more braggadocious for a lot of people. Because hip hop has always been very competitive. It started with battling, and you know, it's kind of a slam kind of, I'm better than you, macho. I tend to zero in on the Ars Poetica, poetry about the poetry itself in the poetry, as a backdrop, making clear the motivation in the song itself explicitly in a way, but also trying to connect it to the overall scheme of the rest of the verse. So in this, I'm kind of commenting on, first of all, a frequency out of focus, muddy the balance, broken. There's a kind of out of balance nature. It's a paradox of being in this music thing where it's very deliberate and driven. I'm a mixer, I'm a sound engineer, so I'm constantly operating within this predictable parameter set of frequencies. But then I'm constantly battling these, I guess you could call them, interesting illusions in society, the rhetoric and the propaganda. And often it leads me to feel a little upset at the absurdity of reality. So talking about how I'm a philosopher at heart, that's where I went to school for philosophy, so I'm in constant reflection with the world around me. So it's a comment on I'm writing, combating that, you could call it disillusionment or uncertainty with the creative aspect, despite knowing that it's absurdity and the muse is driving me. So it's connecting itself to the rest of the verse or the rest of the song. No will at the helm, managing the brilliance, but it's still being driven by this panic of uncertainty. So it's more of that negative, the negative nature of being caught in the muse's grasp, as it were.
Well, there's nothing more natural, you know, when you sit down to write, to just like try to do some phenomenology. Just in, what, yes. What am I experiencing right now? Well, I'm writing. That's the first Correct. Thing that you're doing. So
that's actually a really good point, because a lot of times the phenomenal nature of the experience of creating isn't commented on in music. It's taken for granted. Obviously, the person is creating art. The art has materialized itself in the form of some song or poetry or painting or what have you. But with so much space to say things in hip hop, you do have the ability in just half of a line or one line to set the stage, almost to say, here I am, you know, almost Cartesian, like here I am at the table, time to question what's going on and try to uproot the nature of it and figure out what the motivations are. And of course, I'll definitely talk about this more, you know, as we proceed, but the way writing rhymes works, it's an interesting experience, because the goal is to rhyme effectively, still make sense, but still rhyme and have the rhyming be part of that musicality. It's part of the rhythm. The rhyme and the rhythm are consistent with one another. It's easy to just rhyme random nonsense and have it not make any sense. So there's an aspect of rhyming that it feeds itself. So if I start with a rhyme scheme like out of focus, balance broken, challenge hopelessness, as I'm writing the verse, I can return to those schemes, those rhyme schemes like out of focus, and recall them, call them back in later parts of the verse. So you have this tethering effect, and it leads itself toward the rest of the outcome or what have you. It's interesting looking at it in this aspect, in this point of view, like observing it through this interview, because, you know, a lot of times it's just I sit down, like you say, and I kind of, okay, I'm writing now. I feel the urge. The muse is calling. I sit down and I write. 20 minutes later, I have a whole song. But that process, it's a reflection. It's a reflection point.
And is it still pretty much one pass, or do you go back through and switch up this line and that line and that line?
For the most part, it's one pass. Now, when I enter in the recording phase, when I'm writing, I'm reciting it along the way for the most part. A lot of times, like in Long Way Down, you'll see Long Way Down was written in one pass, from composition to lyrics to mix to record. That was an anomaly, which is why I chose the song. It's very rare that it happens that way.
So you mean you actually had the recording running as you were writing it? Not that much one pass. It was not improvised.
I sat down and I made the music. I wrote the verse and I wrote the verses and I recorded it. There was very little going back. It was kind of like, wow, that works. Let's go move on. That works too. Let's move on. That works too. Let's move on. Very little going back and making adjustments to the composition or to the lyrics. Negative Space was written on a notebook. So you know, I wrote it. A lot of times when I write in a notebook, as opposed to writing on a keyboard or writing on a computer, with notebook, the flow of the handwriting has its own rhythm. So once you get into the groove, you can break that rhythm easily by either getting distracted or messing up or something. So you can stop and say, okay, I need to reassess. Let's see what this sounds like. In this particular song, both verses were kind of written in a frenzy. But I did return to these and kind of build on some of it. Because when you go to record, when you're standing up and you're recording with emphasis and you're using that breath control, it's different from when you're sitting and writing and kind of reciting it in your head. You're not having to use the breath control you need to make sure you can get the line out in some sort of enunciated way where it sounds clear enough, etc. So yeah, a lot of times, I mean, for the most part, you know, a lot of the people that I work with will say I'm one of the few that can write and get up and record it really quickly. It's just a product of me doing it for so long and kind of knowing who I am as an artist and what kinds of things drive me. In a lot of ways, that's what this song is sort of commenting on. It's where I exist in the scheme of things when it comes to musicality and creation.
How much do you actually punch in when you're doing these things? Do you always rap the whole song, or is it a lot of, okay, I didn't quite get the rhythm of that right, I'm going to take another couple passes on that line?
Well, early on, punching in was a staple of the music. It was assumed that you would get through a couple lines, stop. You would get through as much as you can and mess up and then go back and punch in. As I've gotten through it, I'm so much more comfortable with my style and my flow and my breath control because, to be honest, it's an athletic ability to get up and to be able to sort of just kind of let all this out in some sort of controlled manner. And it took a long time for me to really be able to write something, get up and record it without having to punch in. Don't get me wrong, I still have to punch in every now and again because there are aspects where, say, a syllable count runs a little long and I have to sort of speed through a rhyme scheme really quick. And it may not sound as natural on the first go around. So there are some instances where I have to kind of jump in and say, all right, I need to slow myself down, let myself catch a breath and then carry it through. What I've learned to do with punching in, because a lot of the problem with punching in hip hop is that you can tell it's punched in because it's hard to completely complement what you were just recording with the same kind of urgency if you're punching in, because it's all really one take. A lot of times I'll write a verse and I will write in the punch-ins. I'll organize them so they make sense. I'll even concretize them and thematically organize them. So maybe it's a build up in the music where, you know, the beat is about to drop out. So I'll punch in there because it makes more sense. Or there's a change in the drum pattern, or there's a change in the thematic or the conceptual nature of the verse. So I'll punch in there. I try to organize it. Sometimes it happens that it lines up that way where I need to punch in, but it can kind of line up that way. Other times it's just I wrote too many syllables in this line and I didn't give myself enough time to take a breath in the previous line. So you got to stop, because the next line as a result is going to be incomprehensible because you're going to be ending the line gasping for breath. And that's what you want to avoid. You know, you're saying a lot. You want to make sure it's clear, and nothing makes it less clear than trying to catch your breath in the middle of a line.
All right, so we can talk more about your general technique after we get the second song on the table. Before we leave this one, though, tell me about the chorus, about the nah, that even just compositionally, was it a matter of, you know, I'm musing about its reflections on love. I must have heard that love is worth nothing, running from God, you know, feeling persecuted, just feeling, it sounds like, the situation that you're reflecting on. And then the second time you're talking about how your muse is a demon, which ends with it's a change in the matron of insults and she won't take any shit talk, which that's still talking about the muse, right?
Yeah, this song in a lot of ways is just speaking about the paradox of the muse driving one to be expressive in the face of depravity, depression, confusion, the anxiety of the absurd, the existential anxiety of being an intelligent being in a world of absurdity and things that don't make much sense, creating order out of chaos. And the chorus is kind of a rejection of the forces out there that would tell you that you're foolish for being a creator, or a rejection of the idea that the muse is a demon, even though explicitly it feels like she is. Mm-hmm. The very nature of expressing in this way and making it musical and making it sound a certain way and giving it order. The chorus is kind of just a reflection on that rejection of that downside or the downfall of the creator. You know, it's well known that creative people are often controlled by their problems, their demons, and that's why they are creators. So it's a paradox because that is true for me. There are a lot of things in my life that occurred as I grew up that allowed me to be so expressive. But doing it is not giving credence to that plight, but celebrating the fact that it exists and that I can create in a certain way and triumph over the absurdity. And, you know, the chorus is kind of a reflection, rejecting that at the same time as acknowledging it.
So it's a dark minor key song that's voicing some potentially angry thoughts about your craft and your situation, but then rejecting them. So the double negative makes it actually a happy, positive song.
That negative space, that paradox. A lot of ways I think of it, it's an existential crisis made real in a creative format, because realizing how ridiculous it all is, at the same time creating something amazing out of it. It's not ridiculous that it exists, but the motivations seem absurd. If, you know, we could dive into this because, you know, I'm a philosopher at heart. I think about these things a lot, but the idea that we get one go around on the planet and we're forced to kind of run in this hamster wheel of economic capitalistic society and punch in and punch out and jump on the freeway and in rush hour and then lamenting all of that. It's ultimately negative, but it's a necessity. So,
well, that sounds like you're describing the theme of the second song. So let's transition that and get that out there. That is the title track, Long Way Down, from the same album, where right from the beginning, it's the business of clipping wings so we can never fly. Just the rhetoric of closed minds. And the whole thing is, it's time we find a way out. So it sounds like you're talking about exactly this sort of humdrum necessities that you were just referring to.
Yep.
All right. Any other introductory words?
The motivation of this song is more in line with the fact that I was trapped in a pattern of living, a failing relationship, and also being in a professional situation that was monetarily decent but wholly negative otherwise. And the notion of jumping into it and falling and falling and falling and not able to actually hit the ground, that hamster wheel idea, needing to get out. That's basically it. You find yourself trapped. You've been running in place. It's very trivial in some respect, but I think everyone finds themselves thinking that in their life at some point. I've been doing this set of tasks. I've been engaged in this routine. I don't feel like I've moved at all. The things that I find fun are becoming trivial, and it ends up an existential crisis.
Decree, mistakes made, but at least there's a butterfly proud of me. Cocoon broken, and now she's free. Swords and intelligence, yet it's us in this chaos, blushing, trusting our ways, off hustling for pay. I find that I live on the cusp of dismay, skin reacting as it touches your gaze. Isn't passion but havoc and skin and bones, your eyes like amethyst in the punishing rain. Standing with my back to the glistening grove, river in no condition to flow. I like to test the water, but hey, I'm missing my soul. I like to test the water, but hey.
Okay, so it's a little more ethereal. Even your voice has a softer tone than the previous song. It seems like it's not as harsh a... I don't know, do you think about the tone of your voice between songs as, like, there's just the mode that you get into that now I'm rapping, and so that's just how your voice sounds? Or is there a conscious attempt to modulate where, even though I'm not singing a different melody, because it's not, there are no actual chosen notes involved, it's sitting somewhere else in your register in the background?
Yeah, so way more so now than in the past. So part of that evolution was being able to sit in the song in a way that makes sense according to the theme of the song, according to the composition. Rappers have a tendency to just yell because, like we were talking about before, the breath control that it requires, the umph that it requires to jump into that flow and that those rhyme patterns, you kind of want to get it out and you want to make sure you have enough breath control. So the inclination is just kind of just take a deep breath and go. Without a lot of control, a lot of what you'll notice in a lot of the best rappers that exist is, you know, like you were saying, that the ability to weave in and out and have that kind of control. So now it is very conscious. If for me, so in this song specifically, the drums are pounding, but the melodies are very soft. So I kind of want to live in between that. You know, I want to ride that wave in a way that makes sense. I don't want to conflict with the drums because they are very pounding, and I don't want to be so soft. I'm singing, but I'm not singing a melody that I pre-constructed. But at the same time, yeah, I want to blend in. I want to sit in the middle, in that mid-range, and make space for myself to let the content kind of shine. And
well, except in this song, in the places where you actually are singing, although it's... Right. To what extent is it singing, or to what extent is it a vocoder? What is the plugin that you're using to fix it to a pitch and make it sound like that? Is it just auto-tune, tuned up to turned up high?
Mark, I anticipated that you would ask me about that. So it's a little bit of both. My singing voice, because I have no formal training, I can surprise myself sometimes, and I can hold a note sometimes. In this song, I used it to help me a little bit, but also I wanted my voice to be almost an instrument part of the composition as opposed to lyrics on top of it. I wanted it to sound kind of like the backdrop.
Well, and you did that in the previous song that I noticed right. That you were oohing and aahing along with the main string riff.
In the same way, but with actual lyrical content packed into it. My opinion on auto-tuning and tuning vocals and pitch correction has evolved over time. When I was an early hip-hop purist and auto-tuning was becoming popular, I hated it. I thought it meant that you had no talent and you couldn't sing, so you just wanted to dress up the vocals, so you created the illusion that you could sing, and it was kind of cheating. And in a lot of ways, that was true. Anyone can get up on a microphone, and the power of the technology is such that you can just play a keyboard with the vocals and make it any melody you want. In some sense, that's cheap, and it could decry the talent of people who can actually sing. But as I've grown and as I've chosen to implement it with my own music, I've realized that it can be used tactically and tactfully as a dressing, as a mixing technique. It shouldn't be the paramount aspect of the song. Like in a lot of the mainstream hip-hop pop stuff that exists, that is the paramount aspect. That's what draws people in, the illusion of that, I call it candy music. It sounds good just because it sounds good. It can't help but sound good. They've formulated it so it does. There is a sense in which that's true, and it's kind of sad. You know, in this respect, I feel like it's somewhat justified because lyrically and conceptually and thematically, it's a complex song that has a lot of layers of meaning, and it's built into the tapestry of the sound. I wanted it, especially with this chorus, I wanted it to sound catchy in that way. I wanted it to be uplifting in that way.
Well, and I think it's actually less cheesy to do it the way you did it and have it be your voice, which, you know, sounds like a variation off of the rest of the song, as opposed to you imported a singer to just like do this one little thing. And so it would be MC, is it Sacrifice MC or MC Sacrifice? It's never MC Sacrifice, right?
It's just Sacrifice, okay. But at this point now, I don't really care for an alias. You know, it's what I developed when I started as a very young person, and everyone needed to have an alias and an avatar. I started writing rhymes on online message boards, and you're on a message board, you're not using your real name. So, but as you were saying, I wanted it to sound like me and be part of what I presented, not something separate from me. It is tuned, but I sung it. I didn't just kind of like croak it out and then force it into a tune. I sung it as best I could, and I tuned it to make it instrumental, to make it compositional in that way. So
sure. Yeah, no, it's the, to make it sound like an extension of the keyboards. I completely get right. that. I mean, it's part of the sonic palette.
Right. I don't know if you notice, but the beginning, I use this awesome technique where you reverb a sample, and then you isolate the reverb and you reverse the reverb. So it sounds like you're pulling the sound through. So the reverb kind of leads the tuning of that vocal. It leads it. It kind of yanks it through in this elongated section of an intro. So I learned that technique, and I've been using it a lot. It's really cool, especially with something that's tuned like that. You can pluck it out and lead it through and send it flying with that reverb and the mix. And I really wanted to emphasize that. So it sounded really good. The extension of it in the chorus, I'm not using the reverb in that way in the chorus, but the way it begins itself in the intro and the sort of extends into the chorus, there's a continuity there from the intro to the verse to the chorus. And that's important, especially in hip hop, where it can be a lot of lyrics all in your face, making sure that continuity exists between verses and that there is a coherent picture being developed.
And it seems like you've gained some complexity in terms of even the actual drum beats that you're using, that it's not just that there's a snare every 2 and 4. It's more sparse than that. So it's more tune, tune, tune. Or, you know, then yes. Boom, crack, boom, crack.
Hip hop for a long time is that every fourth beat, you know, doom, 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 doom. And you could, I mean, I could rhyme over that until the end of time. It's very easy to, you know, adding in the Eastern flavor of the drums and varying the timing of the snare drops. And it emphasizes the complexity of the lyrical content, but still creates that continuous rhythm, the rhythmic element. I'm still allowed to flow over it because it's consistent enough. It's not random, but it doesn't come across as so uniform that it's boring.
So do you establish the loop and then kind of go through and take out certain beats or nudge them here and there, you know, so that it's not actually playing the loop, it's playing the loop as written onto a track that you're then manipulating?
It's a little bit of both. So with this track, I played it. You know, I quantized it, obviously. I played the kicks, I played the snares, I played the hi-hats. And, you know, it was essentially freestyle the way that I played it. And I looped a few pieces that I really liked. I played the Eastern stuff on my keyboard, excuse me. And of course, a lot of times I'll go back and I'll readjust and I'll find a loop or a pattern that I like, and I'll make that the primary pattern. And then I'll create some fill patterns and some variations during transitions between verse and chorus, etc. I lived in a downtown area where I was just reflecting on college because I was living back where I used to live when I went to college, in the same place. I was back there. I was in a situation where pretty much getting divorced pretty soon, and, you know, with my son. And I was walking downtown. I had breakfast, and I was like, you know, I think it's time I create a song. I walked into a pawn shop. There was a mic sitting in the window of the pawn shop. It was a condenser mic. And I was like, yeah, you know, my current mic is kind of taking a crap. It was like a $70 M-Audio condenser. I got it. I plugged it into my interface. I made the beat, made the music, and it came out. So,
well, and say something about, you were saying how you developed more in terms of creating from the ground up. How has this worked in terms of your keyboard skills? Or is it really that you're playing chords now? It's not just doing one measure, one finger at a time. But is that kind of how it started, and just a matter of doing this a lot? Or did you, so you didn't have lessons at some point that kind of established a basic skill set?
I have zero formal training. I've read and I've taught myself as much as I could, but as I've developed the ability to kind of intuit my way through, now I'm at the point where I can sit down and I can play chord progressions and melodies and construct them in a way. But yeah, I'm at the point now where, especially with this song, I was able to play the whole thing. Every aspect of this song was played. With software, it's amazing because I can hit record, I can play something, I can quantize it, I can go to another track, hit record, play something, quantize it, go to another track, rinse and repeat. Next, you know, in 10 minutes, I have 6 layers or 7 layers of instrumentation. And then I go in after the fact and I move things around. I take some things out, the stuff that conflicts with each other. Even with my typing keyboard, I'm at the point now where I can play, because you have, you know, music to typing, like on GarageBand and stuff. You can use your keyboard and it emulates a piano. I'm at the point now where I know where all the keys are that correspond to a piano on my actual typing keyboard. So at any point, if I want to sit down and write music, I can kind of literally do that, which is pretty cool. I can sit down and I kind of know in general what I'm feeling. I can reproduce it, and it's become intuitive in that way, which is, it's pretty cool at this point in my development as a musician, because if I pick up a guitar, I can solo and I can do a little bit. I can find my way around if we're doing a jam session, but it's a lot more cumbersome than if I sit down at a piano or at a keyboard. I can kind of intuit my way to a structure and then build on it.
Let's talk a little bit through the lyrics. We established sort of what the general theme was, sort of getting in the middle of the first verse. The hedonistic addictions reach a gross climb as the soul dies, to live with demons that show pride in their vicious weakness, the wicked dreaming, those lies. So this is all the after effects of living in this consumerist. So what is the part after that? Do I have to admit defeat if it means this universe is subject to morality?
Now, how do we account for me? Yeah. So there's a lot here. It's all packed in. It's a self-reflection on my personal response to the absurdity of the world that we live in. I spent a lot of years self-medicating certain drugs and hedonistic activities, and they are what they are. But, you know, in a lot of ways, they've stimulated my creative output, but at the same time, acknowledging that they have a physiological detrimental effect, you know, and the nature of being a creative person and battling with that creativity as an outcry against what society expects of you. Show up at your job, be content with the 9-to-5. Don't question the fact that this American dream thing that people have forced you to subscribe to since elementary school, don't question those ideas, just kind of exist. And then, of course, growing up into an enlightened mind, educating yourself and becoming kind of disillusioned and questioning it. That's what those series of lines are kind of talking about. I'm reacting against the state of being that I've been forced into with art and with other things, hedonistic addictions, take that for what you will. And then the idea that there's some sort of inherent morality in the universe. And if there is, then how do you account for the outliers or the anomalies, the creators, you know, the people that create and stand free from that, to still be able to make themselves out to be anomalous despite the masses of people who will go about their day unquestioning.
So clearly showing that you've been reading / listening to stuff about Nietzsche and the existentialists, because when you try to explain to people that have not had that background why being creative has anything to do with denying morality, what, so you get to rape now because you're like, no, that's not the point.
But yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but this notion of a normative prescription of what one ought to do in a society that they didn't choose to be in. I mean, the thrownness, the Heideggerian thrownness, you're just kind of ejected, you're vomited out into the universe. You happen to find yourself in a bag of meat and bones and water called your physical body. You didn't choose your friends. You didn't choose your parents. They didn't choose where you're from. You didn't choose how you're influenced. In a large part, it's kind of a commentary on the nature of deterministic nature of existing in a world that has been operating without you, and then now you're here.
Well, and is it mostly just about having to have a job and the trusting our ways off, hustling for pay? Is that the focus of it? Like, if I could just not have to do this social norm thing and could pursue my creativity, then I would be better off? Okay.
I think that's a very important criticism. I mean, I work in an industry now, in the automotive industry and service, where the people I talk to, they are every day, they are blue-collar, everyday people who have been doing the same thing for 40 years and they're about to retire. And I'm thinking to myself, you get one lap. It's a long lap, but you get one. And to do the same thing for the same reward incessantly, and to convince yourself that it's okay that that's the case, because lamenting and decrying that, and like you said, people will say, well, what's the alternative? You just live under a bridge or what have you? It's like, no. I mean, there are ways that I can exist simultaneously in that, amongst that hamster wheel, and then come home and be part of something like PEL and do something like music and creation and play games and go have fun and, like, you know, separate yourself from that drudgery. Most people, especially in the capitalistic political landscape where everyone is supposed to be held accountable for what's in their bank account, and you're responsible for your outcome, and you had no choice, and you're a failure if you're not a millionaire. It's like, well, maybe, and in some respect on some metric, but I think this moral superstructure that's been imposed upon me, I can actively reject it and still exist within it in a way that works, that makes sense.
All right, so it's the elephant. Stop ignoring the elephant. It's a beast with the hide of truth. Is the elephant the fact that you are doing a job all day or some...
It's a multitude of things. So first of all, if you're stuck in a scenario that you know you need to get out of, every time you're sitting still and reflecting on yourself, if you peek over, if you peek around you, you're thinking about it, you see it, you know it's there, you know you're actively rejecting it, your alarm goes off and you wake up and you proceed to let the elephant drag you. It's that stoic phrase of letting fate drag you rather than drag fate. It's that you made the judgment call to succumb or to subscribe to that prescription. That was a choice that you made. Now, it's a difficult choice to deviate from, and that's the next set of lines. To skin it, you need the might of brutes, you know, with diamond swords and intelligence. It takes a lot of effort to skin the elephant, to realize that you can see through, you can poke holes in that elephant and realize that it's a choice that you made that you can change. It's difficult. Very much so it is. If you find yourself in a situation where you're working, and if you change that situation and you're going to lose income and you're not going to be able to pay XYZ bill, that's very difficult. And I find myself in that predicament all the time. That's the nature of it. Stop ignoring it, acknowledge it, and then perhaps maybe you can, you know, transcend it.
So just focusing on those couple of lines, I can see very easily that once you started thinking about that image, the elephant in the room, that actually taking it literally and talking about skinning it and things, that it flows very naturally. For some reason, I don't recall ever seeing that in a song before. And it could be because you're rapping and there's a different number of syllables that you have to deal with. You're sort of singing a non-rap song. How are you going to put the elephant in the song at all? Like, you have to find something that rhymes with elephant or something. Like, it's not as easy to slip in such things. It seems like you can almost say what you mean more literally, given that you have so many more lines and syllables to deal with and not have to sneak around it. And so the fact that you're using metaphors at all in some of these places, or that some of your lines, that there'll be a whole stanza that I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about. Is that common in hip hop that you listen to, or is it more because you can more literally state what you want to say, that that's mostly what people do?
There are a few things here. First, because I'm in the genre and I've done it for so long, I'm hesitant to generalize a commonality, because yes, there are people who are very literal in their writing style. You don't have to look into the concept of the elephant in the room. When someone says the word elephant, you think of an elephant. You don't have to think of the metaphor. However, there are a lot of people who, like myself, who will oscillate between the literal and the metaphorical and try to combine those concepts and then use rhyming to connect them. So,
I was almost referring more to a line before, like, a frequency out of focus, muddied, the balance broken, student of some illusion, I study to challenge hopelessness. Like, that kind of poetry is just more abstract. It's not the fact that you're using the elephant as a metaphor. I mean, if everybody can use metaphors, but just it being kind of oblique in that way. Like, are there other rappers that you listen to and that you've worked with that also whose obliqueness was an influence on you? Or do you feel like this is just the more you do it, the more you kind of go off in that direction?
That's also a really good point, because with my music and with a lot of the rappers that I find influential, I know that they have an intention. So we're entering into the realm of the unreliable narrator, for example, or giving the audience or the reader or the interpreter the ability to interpret it as they see fit. And the poetic aspect is a really great way of allowing that to occur. So the abstract nature of it is such that I've heard interpretations of my music from all corners of society, of people, all different kinds of interpretations. And that's part of the appeal. Of course, there are rappers out there that it seems like they're very obviously not making sense, and there is no through line, and there is no coherence in connecting the concepts, and it's very obviously random, because with rhyming, it's easy to be random. But at the same time, I have a directed idea in mind, and I'm allowing the images and the rhyme schemes to guide me. And as a result, there is an obliqueness or a vagueness that gives you as a listener or the reader to interpret based on your experience in a way that you might. to me, that's very important. And to be honest, there are times when I go back and read my own lyrics and listen to my own songs, and I have different interpretations. Because again, there is a sense in which it's intuitive. It comes in a flash of musaic inspiration. And there are aspects of it where I'm like, hey, I could see myself thinking of it in these different ways. But at the same time, the existential or the phenomenological nature of the writing process, I remember what I was thinking when I was writing these lyrics. So there's authorial intent, and then there's the subjective hermeneutic. There is an interpretive aspect to it. So that's important to me. I wouldn't want everything to be so literal. Like my best friend, a person that I've been doing music with for a long time, and we have a group together, he's the opposite of me. Unless he's doing a song with me, he's very rarely metaphorical. And if he is metaphorical, they're very surface level simile-based analogies or comparisons.
Is this the Dream Shatterer one?
The two guys that are on that song with me, they're very direct.
When I played any of your individual songs, I would click from the email to the SoundCloud link, and as soon as it would finish whatever song it is, it would immediately go to that Dream Shatterer capital punishment, yo. You know, like,
yeah,
so
which is one of them. Yeah.
Just made me think that, you know, to the extent that you're doing social commentary, you can't be oblique. Like, you can't both tell it like it is and serve up the truth, and this is what you should be doing, but then also be using ambiguous language that is just more poetic and introspective.
Yeah, and you'll find in a lot of my solo stuff, I'm poetic, introspective, but still with social commentary. Like, my stuff is riddled with different aspects of my own being. You know, I'm a creative thinker. I'm a logical person. You know, I got through philosophical training, but my creative outlook is very much intuition and just feeling and thinking in that way. The people that I do music with, in large part, they're very direct in their meaning. And that's fine. But with my stuff specifically, with Long Way Down, especially the whole album, there are some songs that are more direct and more direct in their commentary. But in large part, I like to think that each line can stand on its own, or each couple of lines or each phrase can stand on their own, but then I'm building something that has a grander meaning, that has the potential for more interpretive possibilities there. Whether they're intentional or unintentional to me is irrelevant. I also have a literature degree, and I wrote all these papers on the narrator and the narrative intentional stance and the unreliable narrator and this, how should we interpret a certain fictional apparatus? Should we look at it from a historical standpoint or from a phenomenal standpoint or from a strictly metaphorical or social commentary or feminist or what have you? And it's like, all that's well and good, but as soon as you establish a stance of interpretation, that's going to taint or influence your entire interpretive gaze. And that's fine, but to me, I like to leave it a little bit open, so no matter where you approach it from, you can pull something out that connects to your interpretation or to your life.
So with all that on the table, let's bring in the third song, Kids of the Earth. So I had asked you, you know, for an older song. This is from the Quest for Meaning collection, 2008. Very different palette. It sounds more, I mean, like these guitars and the opera voice. I assume the opera voice was not built from the ground up. You did not get a,
There are some samples in here, yes.
So different construction, different sonic palette. We're using the same software, but just different patches at this point, right?
Yeah, so this is a song that's a mixture of samples and a mixture of piano. So the electronic piano you hear, it's a patch that I played. Mm-hmm. And then you have some, the opera or the choir there, that's a sample. And then you have some other things that are, and it's a hybrid of a sampled piece and some, the bass line and the drums are all played, but some of the stuff is other layered on top of that. So I chose this song for many different reasons. First of all, I did create the composition, you know, granted, there are some sampled aspects to it. So that was important to me. And also, like you said, it's packed with lyrics. And then each verse is talking about a specific instance. And then the choruses are iterated upon one another, but the choruses change. And I hadn't done that a lot in my experience with writing music, and make a lot of time hook should be repetitious for a reason. It should bring you back to a central theme. And it still does, sonically or melodically, but lyrically it changes. And that was important to me because it helps the song progress in that way.
I saw and continue to notice the Most difficult notions, rippled emotions from simple devotion, a crippled and hopeless son. Trickles the growth to us, pivotal moments touched as the tears like missiles explode with trust. And the fear, so minimal here, cause we know where we sit in this weird existence. Persistent to clear and vicious, the mission from here. That boy, his growth, a choice, even when the voice corrodes the poise. And as the picture snaps, the image as the pic extracts the facts. Relax with this, compassion is fashionless, and I can't really fathom this. No matter how hard we practice this, love, it finds a way to clash with bliss and crash till it smashed to bits. But out of the black abyss, the result, the catalyst.
It's a light so bright, it's imagineless, and I fight all night like a pacifist. And those passive and lasting attractive myths, like it's really up to us to captain ships. And knowing that we must be strapped to the holy, the wrath of the lonely, just ask her to phone me. Faster than slowly, disasters that show me, the captured and lonely, the master that holds me.
Past of the soul, she has it the so sweet magic, and that is just so deep. And the life that we live in this era and age, fearing the plagues, she happens to hold keys. Clear as the day, we sat in the slope green, laughed as the whole theme was passion and hope breathes. Like a mirror, her face, and yet the reflection with depths of perception, so adept at connection. She looks into your eyes, a true surprise. You see yourself in the eyes, the essence, amused but wise, and way more than amused. The eye, the great wars that we choose to fight will come to an end if she caved for. Blue as the sky, the two of a side. Feel the real through her touch, the real that you feel when the real is too much. The feel of the real is the feelings, and I'm still in her clutch. And the paint is the chains, and the heel is the brush.
I used to ride with my soul by the side of the road. Hey now, come and get a price for the gold. Pray loud, running from the bite of the cold, but stay sound. Something isn't likely to hold. So I've seen the beauty in the pain of my friends. I've seen the beauty to the greatest extent, and I'm trying to be the soothing inspiration to them. And the sky, this isn't moving, so I pray for the best.
I'm living life like the fight that I know that it is. I sit and write for the poet within. I know I'm only a kid growing in bliss, showing the kinfolk that it's this old and the thick growth. The myth shows that I'm wishful in the fishbowl, in the window when I swim slow, in the pin stroke. I just hope that it hits home. I'm passed out, sitting up with pressure on my wrist bones. I thank you for catching me, and I've been stoned, I've been thrown. The wickedest curves, and it's helped me realize what my mission is worth. The kids of the earth, I know what each minute is worth. I took a trip with my heart on the sleeves of the earth. Slow down, come and get your meaning and worth in those clouds. Struggling and cleaning the hurt, so child. The know-how you need is its birth, a snowplow. I know now the meaning of work. So, I've seen the beauty and the pain in my friends. I've seen the beauty to the greatest extent. And I'm trying to be the soothing inspiration with them. And the sky that isn't moving, so I brace for the best. And I've been thrown the wickedest curves, and it's helped me realize what my mission is worth. Kids of the earth, while they struggle, I will fight.
There's a lot of movement here. There's a lot of lyrics. Let's just kind of start at the beginning. So I saw and continue to notice the most difficult notions, ripple emotions from simple devotion to crippled and hopeless.
I want to make clear here a thing about rhyming in hip-hop that people who don't listen to it a lot may not notice or may skip over. The multi-syllable rhyme patterns that add that extra layer of rhythm. So you have that continue to notice difficult notions. So you have, like I was saying before, I'm constructing rhymes based on the elements that I've developed from the beginning. So they unfold in a way, they cascade out. Very rarely do you have an isolated rhyme couplet that's not connected to some other part of the verse, whether it be a syllable count or an assonant or a consonant rhyme or a rhyme scheme in its entirety.
Well, and I doubt you would just be saying this weird existence or something. You know, you wouldn't just come up with a phrase like that if it didn't spill out of the sounds of the words that you're using.
It's very easy to interpret it as, well, you're just rhyming. And I often look at it as an emergent quality of the rhyming and the music and the poetry that I don't necessarily have a whole lot of control over, but there's coherency there. It exists. It makes sense because I'm speaking about something specific. So it's interesting. I've thought about this a lot in my many years of doing this. How it emerges in the way that it does, as effectively as it does, still mystifies me, because I can sit down and I can start with a rhyme scheme and I can end a verse where pretty much everything rhymes and there's still a coherent picture. What that tells me is there's enough language and there are enough words and enough concepts that I can pick from the cosmos of concepts and language, constructed in such a way to have it have these patterns and still have it be coherent and make sense in a lot of ways. So that's always been mind-boggling to me, even as I'm one of the ones that can do it. This one specifically, this is a reflection of my best friend and I sitting on our porch after a night of pretty heavy drinking. And my friend is crying over the fact that he has a young child and his family is tearing apart. And I'm commenting on the snapshot of that image and the feeling of that emotional outburst.
The tears like missiles exploding with trust.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool image, but like if it was in a song where it was slowed down.
Right.
My tears like missiles exploded with trust. Like that would not make any sense at all. But in the context is great.
Right. It's woven together in this picture because he's literally crying on my shoulder as one of the only people that I trust the most. I don't have any brothers, but he is my brother. So it's a snapshot. What's cool about this verse and what's cool about this song is each verse is a snapshot of a very specific experience. That interaction probably lasted 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then we got up and we went about our evening. But it had such an impact. You know, the first few rhymes, you know, the notion that, you know, it's these emotions spilling out, crippling us at that moment. It's what's awesome about being a creator. It's almost like a conceptual photographer. You can kind of take a picture and then you can analyze it and then spill it out using language. And that's very much what this verse is. The idea of compassion is fashionless and how people think that you're being soft and empathy is a kind of old world ideal. And we live in this dog eat dog capitalistic, shove people aside and make your money and go about your day. And it's like, it means a lot for people that you care about and even people that you just met to sit down and just kind of let yourselves trust each other for a moment and speak about what you feel and let that experience saturate the potential of the rest of your life. That's important. That's really what that first verse is about. I could think of two other moments during that summer that I could encapsulate into a story and, again, create that snapshot.
So, well, that's crazy that that whole thing is one verse because I thought halfway through, like, this whole different musical thing enters, the drums drop out, that boy, his growth, the choice, even when the voice, when that stuff comes in, it sounded like, okay, this is like the B section, but you're saying that whole thing was just written as one verse from the beginning of the song through the catalyst.
Yeah, the first verse is, or the first half of that verse is a top-down commentary. And then when that boy, his growth, jumps in, that's a more specific picture of what's going on. So that's where the phenomenal aspect, the actual experience enters, and then I go on to comment about that.
Well, and then it gets very quickly to you're talking about your writing again, the BIC exacts with facts.
Yeah, so there's an Ars Poetica. There's a hey, you know, there's a hey, check it out. If you're listening, relax with this idea.
And it's the same idea from the previous, class with bliss and crash till it's smashed to bits, but out of the black abyss, the result of the catalyst, which is the artistic creation, right?
Right. Yeah, so then you find yourself in the chorus, which, again, the chorus continues the rhyme scheme. There's a separation there, but the rhyme scheme continues, suggesting that there's continuity there, which there is, because I'm commenting and I'm connecting these experiences with the overall idea.
One stylistic thing we hadn't talked about yet is where you decide to double your vocals or do an echo or,
yeah.
You know, I'm certainly familiar with when rap groups, it's three guys on a stage and the way that they, you know, besides trading verses back and forth, it's somebody jumps in to double the last word of each line or something like that. Or I don't think it's so much singing an entire chorus doubled. I don't know if that's was as common a thing, but is that kind of what you're channeling when you double track yourself or do a little echo?
Sure. I mean, there are a few things there. First, during the verses, a lot of times you want to emphasize either punctuation points where a phrase will end and it's a complete meaning. So you'll use overdubs or ad libs to emphasize that, or you'll just emphasize the rhyme patterns to make them clear. Because again, that quick rhyming is also part of the rhythm. And that's what makes it appealing and catchy to the ear. It's very easy to just go yada, 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 black, yada, 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 jack. That can be very repetitive and droning. But if you have something where you're like the clear and vicious, the mission from here, that, you know, so you find yourself emphasizing some of those rhyme patterns to bring them to light. But then things like the chorus, where I'll overdub the entire thing, first of all, as an aesthetic choice or as a compositional choice to, or a production choice to bring it out as the chorus, to make it obviously the chorus.
Even though it never comes back, at least not exactly like this.
Right. Overdub the whole thing, and there are some backdrops like strapped to the holy, wrath of the lonely. You'll kind of harmonize certain aspects of it to make it obviously a chorus part of the song. And then you jump into the second verse where it drops out, past of the soul, she has it the so sweet. So there's a clear transition. But just like in the beginning of the chorus and the end of that first chorus, the rhyme scheme continues. I could combine those and it could all look like one verse because there's no discontinuity in the way that the rhymes connect with one another. And so the ad-libs, using the reverb and using the echoes and stuff, that demarcates that it's obviously the chorus. So it sounds that way, but also, you know, making that transition clear, which is important.
And what is the light so bright? It's imagineless. Is it the muse? That's what it sounds like from the context, but...
Right. So, but out of the black abyss, the catalyst, you know, what you're hearing, what you're listening to, or from a phenomenal practical standpoint, what you're doing to get yourself out of that black abyss, whatever that might be.
But it's not directly self-referential braggadocious that this chorus is the light. My creative product is.
Right. It's also a commentary on anyone who might be in a situation where they've unraveled themselves into a darkness. That darkness could also be the catalyst to propel themselves out into the light. Again, it's not a secret that artists are influenced or encouraged or their art emerges out of plight or out of hardship.
And it was like it's really up to us to captain ships. I think that was the line in this one that, you know, on first listen, like, oh, this is what it's about.
Right.
It's about taking responsibility and being socially conscious in some general way.
Taking hold of your fate, being the captain, even though it feels like a lot of times you are a passenger. We could talk for hours on free will and determinism, and I have my own ideas. In general, I'm a light compatibilist, even though I, on the one hand, I feel like I have the ability to choose my direct, immediate actions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like, and this is what I wrote about in my undergrad work, the notion of constitutive luck, the idea that I had nothing to do with my constitution, my genetic output, where I'm from, who I am. That's all luck. I mean, I'm fortunate to be in America and not Ethiopia, for example, or where have you. That deterministic quality and that line, like it's really up to us to captain ships, it speaks to both ideas. Like it's really up to us to captain ships. It is really up to us to captain our ship, be the captain of our trajectory on this planet. I find myself when I go back and look at my own music that I'm returning to the same themes. Even in 2008, I'm talking about the muse and being directed and being driven and being encouraged and lamenting about my station in life and trying to reflect on that so other people can see it as well, you know, as a mirror of sorts.
All right. So getting out of the chorus, then thrown in here kind of unexpectedly, given the rest of the context, is a really good love poem. Yeah, starting a few lines in, the clear as the day, we sat in the sloped green, laughed as the whole theme was passion and hope breathed like a mirror. Her face and yet the reflection with depths of perception, so adept the connection. She looks into your eyes, a true surprise, and you see yourself in her eyes, the essence, a muse, but wise and way more than a muse to I.
This is about a very specific person and a very specific moment when I realized that I was in love with this person, even though she was a really good friend. She is a person. It's not an illusion. It's not an embodiment of the muse. It's not the Boethian muse or philosopher's muse. She exists. And as a result, I know that
there was clear to me. That was
yeah. There are examples of her in everywhere. It's funny because like I kind of mythologize her. I make her a legend in this verse. But anyone who knows her, anyone who's ever met her, feels the same exact way. If she existed in another society where they needed a spiritual leader, she would be that spiritual leader. It's the type of person that exudes positivity, but not naivety. It's different. There's a wisdom there. It's not just sort of blind positivity, you know, ignoring the fact that shit is fucked up, but she's all of that. And we sat there on a slope, green grass, a stream in front of us, talking, the realization that love can exist in a pure form.
Well, and then right where you stopped is, I think, the best line in the song. I feel the real through her touch, the real that you feel when the real is too much. Whatever her particular excellence is, this is a more universal thing about love and about seeing yourself through the other person's eyes and having it all work.
Right. And anyone who has been in that experience where they've had that realization wash over them, like, I suppose this is love. I guess this is it. it kind of overwhelms you, but then you kind of see it as an obvious truth. It's so very starkly clear. But at the same time, it's like, whoa, it can be very overwhelming, because that realization that there's a metaphor of your own experience that exists out there in physical form that you're currently interacting with, the real can be too much, because as a result, you know, this person is no longer in my life. It was fleeting. It was so powerful, and it was so quick, and it was too soon. It was bad timing, all the standard trivial excuses why a certain thing didn't work out. But it's true. I mean, I was young. She was a little older, just in my experience with this person. But in general, you can find yourself on a path, and then that path yields you a certain wisdom. And maybe you were too young to acknowledge its prowess or its power over you, and you come to terms with it after the fact.
All right. So you're answering my next question, which is how that this relates to the overall theme, you know, the last chorus where you're just talking about the different troubles you've had. I've seen the beauty and the pain of my friends. I'm trying to be a soothing inspiration to them. I've been thrown the wickedest curves, and it's helped me realize what my mission is worth. Those last three lines, the only thing that seems to repeat a couple times in the song.
Despite my music being wholly negative, like, holy crap, why do we exist in this absurd nonsense? It's obviously an abyss. There is no purpose and no point. There's no God, and there's no hope, and there's no happiness. I lament on those ideas, but ultimately, we are the progenitors of our progenitors. It's an ongoing chain of influence that even if my impact on the planet is a song here or there or an interaction with a person, that carries itself through to the following generations. And it's important that even if, again, it seems trivial or what have you, or cliche, but despite the nonsense and despite the hardship, moving forward, allowing yourself to grow, coming to terms with the absurdity, but also growing, this song defined my project as an artist and a musician, making music that could be inspiring to a certain extent, thought-provoking and encouraging.
I was glad we included this, and also this goes for the Stasis Free, the instrumental that we started with, in that it's not so grim, it's prettier, even though vocally you're kind of back in your heavy rap voice here,
yes.
Which you could be talking about capital punishment or how everything is poison or any number of I'm angry, angry, angry. You have a lot of songs like that are either... whether confessional or social or both. I listened to quite a lot of your material. It seems like most of it is pretty heavy. Like, I don't hear a lot of jokes, and you might be about the absurdity of the universe, but you're not using rhymes to do puns and like, that's just not when you're being serious and you're actually like your muse is coming out. It's not going to come out like that. It's going to come out earnest in some way.
When I first started, it was me emulating rappers, and there were a lot of songs where I did where I'm the best and I'll kill you lyrically, and I have the murderous flow and whatever. And that's flexing, that's lifting weights, that's toning yourself, that's becoming a rhymer. That exists, there's a place for it, but it's not what I want to do. If I'm going to sit down and dedicate my time to something, specifically something that I'm going to create, first of all, it's going to be a derivation of something that I've gone through. So as a result, I don't want to trivialize it in a cheap way.
So it seems like humor and lightness. I mean, like Nietzsche is a guy, as you know, that uses humor and lightness, yet is earnest and is over the top in terms of inflammatory. But it seems like from what you're talking, the hip hop world, that to the extent that you're kind of being fun, you're being shallow. You're strutting, as you're saying there.
And there are examples of that. But there are examples of the contrary, too. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. There are amazing storytellers out there that can tell a hilarious story in rhyme form and have it have an allegorical or a metaphorical meaning that can be very deep. But in large part, the perception of hip hop is you turn on the radio and there's no substance there. Every rapper sounds like they're writing from a script, and the concepts are the same, and it's uninspiring, and it just sounds good. They formulated it in a way to make it sound appealing. It doesn't mean there's any depth to it.
You had sent me your album last year or the year before. Yeah, last year when it came out, and I listened to it once, I think. But since this is not the kind of music I normally listen to, like, it was only doing an episode like this that forced me to look at it enough and get a sense of the scope of what you do enough to really get it in any meaningful way. And that's, yeah, because most of the rap that I've been exposed to is through the radio. It's just as bad as most of what's on the radio. in any genre. Does it seem a correct assessment that it's, you know, chasing down indie rappers is probably going to be the way, or some other, I guess, since the radio is no longer like decentralized, the way that people get culture now, there can be.
But yeah. But in other words, the 40 million hits on Spotify is probably not the person you want to go after.
Uh-huh. Well, I will trust your recommendations to get me some more folks within and bordering on this genre. I'm hoping that it's not entirely insular. I mean, it's such a different skill just to get fluent with the rhyming in the way that you're talking about and writing in this style. It almost seems like the kind of people that do this are not going to be the kind of people that are also, you know, really good guitar players or whatever, such that you're going to have a lot of crossover. It's either, but I don't know. You can tell me.
There are obviously exceptions out there, but in the large part, it's true. It exists in a different corner of musicality. Mm-hmm. It's more lyrical, it's conceptual, it's poetic, and it's a writing style that happens to have some cohabitation with rhythm and music, which is awesome because poetry exists and it always will exist. Being able to integrate it with music in a way that gives it rhythm and a package, a sonic or a harmonic package, is awesome because otherwise there's a lot of poetry out there. Hip-hop gives you a different channel through which to realize that poetry. And that's important because despite what you hear on the radio, there are a lot of people out there with a lot of things to say. Rhyming just so happens to give them the like I always say, that the palette of paint and the canvas with which to conceptualize certain ideas, whereas they might not be the best or the most legible or the most articulate writers in a prose form or even in conversation. Man, I've met some geniuses that haven't had a single day in school because their genius has been allowed to saturate itself through rhyming. And that's incredible. Genius exists in all corners. And if we can find ways to encapsulate it or package it, hip hop happens to be one of those things. And of course, from a cultural standpoint, hip hop has always been a kind of thing that started in the downtrodden, underprivileged aspects of the world, specifically in American society. And a lot of the greatest that ever existed are people that they're not scholars, but they're street scholars or they're poetic scholars in a way that you wouldn't find a John Donne or an Oliver Twist or something or something like that. But they exist. Hip hop is a nice channel for that.
Well, let's use that as a way to introduce your last song. So this is Cyphers off the same album. Our goal here was just pick something, since you have so many songs where you feature other rappers on it. I see this one is Grimm, or Benjamin Grimm as he identifies himself. And in this song, it seems like you, throughout the first verse, you establish kind of what the song's about, and then he comes in and he does his thing. Now, tell me a little about how that interaction works. Is it that he sees and hears what you've come up with and launches on that theme? Is there any sort of discussion, any sort of critique? Do you even understand what the people you're rapping with are rapping about all the time? Or is it kind of like, that's their section and you stay out of it?
It's good that you framed the question that way because it's a little bit of both. The nature of rhyming and the nature of hip hop is that you give someone 16 lines, that's their 16 lines. Say you and I wanted to do a mural on a brick wall and, you know, I did the background and, hey, it has this theme, you do the foreground and you do the characters. I'm going to let you do that, you know.
So there's never like a Lennon McCartney or, you know, one of those collaborations of, here, I've written this thing down and I email it to you and you say, hey, but what about this line here? Like, is there any of that kind of collaboration on each other's rapping?
With Grimm, no, because he's been a person that I've worked with sporadically throughout my career. Now, career, if you want to call it that. Now, with someone like my friend Rob or Outspoken, I've done 7 albums with him. So we've done whole albums where we sat and wrote them together. So it's a more conventional approach where we're going to sit down, we're going to choose the instrumentals, we're going to write together, we're going to critique and change each other's verses. But still, in large part, this is your 12 lines. Here's the theme. I trust the fact that you're a genius and you'll write it and it'll be great.
And realistically, even like Lennon McCartney kind of stuff, that's what they would do anyway. Is it's not really, I do one line, you do one line. I sometimes like to write like that with other people, but that's an exception. If you actually have something you want to say, and I would think, given that I write one line, you write one line, if we do that twice, that's like a whole rock verse, but that's like 3 seconds of one of your songs. Like, it has to be, I write a stanza, you write a stanza.
That's important too, because like Rob and I, we've done songs where we've literally traded off one line or two lines a piece, and it comes out awesome, but it's a totally different approach. But yeah, I mean, you do music with someone for long enough, you trust the fact that they're in tune with you. Now, I've done enough songs with Grimm, and if you listen to it, you'll notice his verse is different from my two verses drastically. But his encapsulation of the cipher is something like a hip-hop cipher or a rhyme cipher. And what that basically is a bunch of dudes standing in a circle trading rhymes with each other. I'll spit five lines and you spit five lines and we'll just go back and forth. That's a rhyme cipher. Go around in a circle.
Whereas you're talking about consumerism and its blinding effect on...
I'm talking about data encryption, consumerism, and the illusion of rhetoric and propaganda and stuff like that. So that's what's cool about this song. There's a thread that binds the two that's off-center, but still there's still a connection there. That's a conceptual connection. And that song came out really cool, and I'm glad that you chose that over the others, because I wasn't sure, because there are a few others that I could have chosen, but I think musically the chorus came together really well.
Well, and you got the nice little harmonizer effect on the vocal in the chorus to make it sound like a chorus, that it's another shtick to kind of add some structure to the song, because,
sure,
you know, like Kids of the Earth, when you've got so many verse after verse after verse, that unless you did these things like, okay, now we're going to double the vocals, now we're going to have this, hey, now we're going to, you know, things that emphasize certain parts, then it might just be a big blur.
Exactly. And ciphers is cool in that way too, because it, you know, we're back to the minor key-ish stuff, but it's conceptually a lot different than the other songs. It has a social commentary aspect to it. The idea that money is a cipher and language is a cipher and meaning is a cipher and morals are a cipher. The meanings of these concepts are given to us. We don't create them. And as a result, in my opinion, most meaning is wholly arbitrary. And you and I could probably talk about that for hours. But meaning and concept and subjectivity leads me to believe that most things that we've decided upon are still essentially arbitrary. They've been made up at some point. We've decided upon a consensus of meaning, and we've carried those about. And when something comes along to change that meaning, people who are traditionalists or geneticists or conservatives, they're going to fight against changing those meanings or those conventions. But it's because they've been encrypted in tradition and things of that nature. So that's what the song is about, and it's awesome that it's been tethered together with Grimm's verse, who it's mostly a hip-hop verse where he's, yes, you know I'm the sinister, you know, he's back to that braggadocious hip-hop, I'll kill you with my rhymes. Talking about ciphers in a more direct metaphor rather than offsetting the metaphor to some social commentary. And I thought that was a really cool contrast. When I got the verse back from him, my first inclination was to be like, no, write something more social. Because I've done songs with him, conspiracy songs with him, for example, about angels and demons, where he's very specifically talking about very specific conceptual things, for example.
Sure.
And this one, I was inclined to be like, no, send me something that's
about what you were writing about. Yeah.
But then I thought about it and I was like, that's a cool deviation. His flow is different. His rhyme style is different. He's from the West Coast, so he has a West Coast style. And if you get into hip hop, you'll start being able to delineate where people are from and where the influences come from, and, you know, the enunciation on the words and stuff like that. And I thought that was a really cool contrast, and the song came together really well. And it was definitely one of my favorite songs that I've done, especially on this album. So I'm glad we're able to show it. So.
Well, thanks for doing this.
It's been awesome. I've been looking forward to it, man. I've been doing a lot of work with you, and it's cool to have a conversation. So
yes, yeah, very great to both to be forced to listen to your output and to hear you talk at this length. We've never had a conversation of this length before.
So. No, they're usually very short email blips about, I'll get it to you tomorrow.
All right, man. Have a great evening.
You too, man. Thanks a lot.
Messages depicted in symbols encrypted at no end, only bound by its algorithm. Axiomatic, a power system, a sound division, a specialist in foul consumers. Excellent in cloud computers, currency hidden in our illusion, and talents needed to understand it. Check for the black markets. Masters choosing to hack targets, a mass diffusion. Unless you have the blueprints, you're captive to this.
silent mystery. Check your history. I hope you're listening.
Listening, listening.
Ciphers inside us to blind us from everything. Everything. It's time that they set us free. I hope you're listening. It's not a mystery. Check your history. Ciphers inside us denying our liberty. Liberty. It's time we get rid of these.
Circles of revolution, guillotine bars, a lyrical execution. We break it down like binary code, back to the basics. Numbers on the boards, I'm pushing T in the matrix. An ace with this paper and pen, I get my swerve on. 20 Montana, I'm punished, you know my word born. A criminal, my syllable game is something serious. I'm old school, tagging my name across the pyramid. So hold on, too many lost in translation. I'ma break the chain, we run at the plantation. Too many MCs, not enough time. Too many wannabes, not enough rhymes. Who am I? Benjamin Grimm, and I'm the wordsmith. Everything is fire, my lyrics are what I burn with. I'm uncut, I'm up for the wall, and I'ma run this. I pull the trigger 16 bars out of my gun clip.
It's not a mystery, check your history. I hope you're listening.
Listening, listening.
Ciphers inside us to blind us from everything. Everything, it's time that they set us free. I hope you're listening. It's not a mystery, check your history. Ciphers inside us denying our liberty. Liberty, it's time we get rid of these.
On the true frequency, this type of killing hurts. It's time to build a complete machine to repel the beast. A strategy to capture streams of data feeding your fantasies. Subliminal the irony, capital crush to get rid of all the white elites. Nazi to lunch, yo, it's critical. We network the symbolism experts are planning advertisement schemes to collect perks. This is next gen work from the dungeons of society constructed on our right to speak. As we're struggling for piracy, we rhyme the beast to keep the mind free from the poisons destroying our lives of peace. Sign the lease, debt for credit, the price is cheap. Consider the code, the bread is living, the digital dough. Fiat is green, printed and grown, aside their keep. Behind lock and key, but the cipher's weak, cause
it's not a mystery, check your history. I hope you're listening.
Listening,
cipher's inside us to blind us from everything. Everything, it's time that they set us free. I hope you're listening. It's not a mystery, check your history. Cipher's inside us denying our liberty. Liberty, it's time we get rid of these. It's not a mystery, check your history. I hope you're listening. Cyphers inside us to blind us from everything. Everything, it's time that they set us free. I hope you're listening. It's not a mystery, check your history. Cyphers inside us denying our liberty. Liberty, it's time we get rid of these.
Thanks again to Tyler. Again, just go on SoundCloud, look up Sacrifice MC or soundcloud.com/sacrifice. That's got all of his recent work. The older albums are on the SoundClick site, and I will link to the stuff we talked about from the blog post accompanying this episode. I do hope to have more hip-hop artists on here in the future. If you are one, if you know of one that'd be interested in doing this, or a guest in any genre, a genre that you have not heard yet that you want to hear on here, please reach out to me at mark@nakedlyexaminedmusic.com. Even if you don't want to be on the show, I would love to hear your music. Send it to me. Very excited. Next episode, Bill Bruford, legendary drummer with Yes and King Crimson and his own bands. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Go follow us on Facebook. Until next time, keep on musicking. This is Mark Lintzmeyer signing off.